with the 32nd pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris McPherson, and it is another episode of the Journey to the Draft podcast. And look, Fran and I have a lot to get into. Lance Zierlein from NFL.com is our Mr. Relevant, and he's going to have tons of great information. He does scouting reports on over 400, it might be close to 500, of the prospects with detailed analysis, grades, and the whole nine. A lot of news to get into in our draft buzz. Phenomenal questions in our draft mailbag and our pick six. Six players who might be just too good for the Eagles to pass up at number 32. So it's going to be a long one. So buckle up, get ready for the ride, and let's get into the latest happenings in our draft buzz.
Now it's time for draft buzz.
All right, no time to waste here, Fran.
Let's get into it.
Let's make this happen here. For draft buzz, well, actually, I'll let you kind of kick things off here, okay?
Okay.
You did an epic of a piece, I will say.
Oh, what was the final word count?
So for those of you who listen to the podcast and know how things go with us here at the Eagles, Fran does the Eagle Eye in the Sky columns, which are outstanding. Tremendous all 22. I learned so much from them. There are times, though, when he warns me. He warns me about the word count. They're detailed, and I like to go through them. I like to, give it the proper
trim,
give it the proper due.
Yeah.
I don't even try to do that. Usually, when you hit 3,000 words on an eagle eye,
that's a long one, right?
That's when I'm like, put the kids to bed, say goodnight to the wife. It's going to be a little while.
How long was this? I have no idea.
So, you and Ike Reese sat down for about how long, would you say?
Just like 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours.
Yep.
And watched tape of...
I just took my phone, I opened up the recording app, I hit record, I put it on the desk, and we watched one game of Roquan Smith, one game of Tremaine Edmonds, one game of Leighton Vander Esch, and like 10 snaps of Rashawn Evans, but then we ran out of time.
So, what's actually interesting is I don't think you actually told me.
Oh, I just looked at the word.
I was hoping you didn't. So I think you sent it to me Friday.
Yes.
But I didn't, because you sent it to my Gmail, and I don't think I realized it was there until like Friday night.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, Fran's probably wondering why it's not up yet. All right. So I finally opened it Saturday morning, and I just said, my day is gone. 7,000. 7,600 words. I'm just like, I think it's going to break the CMS.
It was tough because I couldn't tell how many words it was because it was just a conversation. You read the article and you'll see. So it was tough to keep an eye on how long it was.
That's good.
Hashtag long form.
Beyond long form. This was beyond long form. So it took me a lot longer than I would have liked over the weekend to.
Sorry about that.
No, not be sorry about it. No, I came out of it with a greater understanding of these three linebackers.
It goes well with the podcast.
So make sure you read the piece. But quite honestly, you're going to need a lunch break. You're going to need to, if you want, it's really, when you hit 3 o'clock today, hopefully the podcast is out before 3 o'clock this afternoon, and you're like, I need to kill the final 2 hours of my work day.
Yep.
This is the way to do it. And there's video to compliment too. So
That's right. So
not all just text.
I was happy to find video to compliment.
So getting to actual news here, Gil Brandt was the subject of Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback.com, the MMQB. And first, he's going on and on. Now, look, he's a longtime Dallas personnel guy, loves Dallas, been there for many years. This is going to be the draft of all drafts. This is going to set the standard for drafts moving forward. It's coming off the heels of Philadelphia.
We'll wait and see. Yeah.
All right. You're in an indoor facility and could be a great atmosphere, but quite honestly, the steam's in the middle of nowhere. Philly was just a perfect location. The weather was ideal. You had the great fans. It was a tremendous setting. A quarter of a million people over the 3 days. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing experience. And quite honestly, being here at the NovaCare Complex for all 3 days of draft, I didn't even get to experience it.
Right.
So it's one of my regrets here is that I wasn't able to be there for it this year. And this year it would have been outstanding to have it back there again because of the fact the Eagles are defending champions. But that being said, he does have a great nugget, or at least has a belief of his, and he's the person who's in charge of inviting the players to the draft. So if a player is invited to the draft, most likely the guy's a first-round pick. Now, Shaquem Griffin is the exception by far this year. But he says that Mike McGlinchey, favorite of both of ours, guy we would love to see in Midnight Green, going to be a top 10 pick.
He should be.
Should be. But I guess it's you haven't seen his name in the mocks.
You haven't seen it, but he should be.
So, by far, it was a great read. There was a lot of information about the quarterbacks and things of that nature. The standout thing to me, though, was that he is Mike McGlinchey, will be a top 10 selection when all's said and done.
He's a top 10 player for me, so he should be.
We have also on Philadelphia.com, after you read Fran's tremendous piece, Tommy Lawler did his first Eagles-only mock draft.
Oh, I love these.
He's very in tune. Look, Tommy is gets no inside-the-building information. Tommy is just very astute at reading the tea leaves, watching the schemes, finding fits for what the Eagles do. So it's always very interesting to look at his mock drafts because there's always a guy or two who ends up being selected by the Eagles. This year, with the 32nd pick, he has Justin Reed, the defensive back out of Stanford, as the Eagles' first-round selection.
Smart, versatile, athletic, wore a number of hats for Stanford over the course of his career, played a ton of different positions, and can do everything at a functional level. You need him to play in the slot, out wide, single high, down in the box. I'd like to see him get a little bit more physical, a little bit more consistent as a tackler. That'd be something I'd like to see a little bit more from. Didn't see a lot of reps from him as a post player, but if you want smart, reliable safety play, that's Justin Reed.
So, Eagles, no picks in the second round, third round.
Yep.
Tommy wasn't going to do trades, just to simplify it. Goes with Kalen Ballage in the third round, the running back out of Arizona State.
Physical marvel at the position. He's big. He's really athletic. Can get down the field. He was a good receiver over the course of his career with Arizona State. Was just never a full-time player, and he should have been because of his skill set. Now, there's another guy there, another guy who's in this class, Demario Richard. It's going to be a late-round pick. And he was the starter for the most part over Kalen Ballage, a guy that he's not as talented as. So there's questions there, but from a physical upside perspective, Kalen Ballage is very intriguing.
So the Eagles signed Richard Rodgers to a contract, 1-year deal last week to be the backup to Zach Ertz. But in the fourth round, Tommy Lawler has the Eagles taken Durham Smythe.
I haven't watched yet.
Out of Notre Dame, really?
I haven't watched yet. He was at the Senior Bowl. Obviously, if he went down there, I would have watched him beforehand. My understanding of it is that he has the potential to be a three-down guy because he wasn't really used as a pass catcher, but he has pass-catching ability and that he's a pretty good blocker. But I'm going to reserve full judgment until I watch him.
So, last three picks, all on defense.
Yep.
Okay.
I watched all three of these guys.
Okay. P.J. Hall.
Yep.
Sam Houston State.
Yep.
Defensive tackle.
Extremely productive defensive tackle for Sam Houston State. The numbers were just ridiculous. Then he went to his pro day, and the numbers were really ridiculous. Did all kinds of things up front for them. I know he's a favorite of Lance Zierlein, who we're going to talk to in a bit. P.J. Hall is intriguing because the numbers say that he is really, really intriguing. And I've watched him, and he is a disruptive player at that level of competition.
Eagles double down on the D-backs in this draft with Saron Neal out of Jacksonville State being Lawler's next-to-last selection for the team.
He's got corner safety ability. He played both spots. He played corner. A lot of people view him as a future safety. He's 6 foot. He's 206 pounds. Plays with an edge. Like, from a personality standpoint, he fits this defense. Like, he's a Jim Schwartz type of defensive back because of the edge that he plays with. It'll be interesting to see if he's viewed as a corner or safety long-term.
Is his nickname going to be Saron Rapp, wherever he ends up?
No, that's not bad. That's not bad.
I'm just going to leave after that one.
It's a good dad joke.
Last one, thank you. The last pick for the Eagles, linebacker Sky Moore.
I've always liked Sky Moore. I thought he's probably going to end up being a day three guy. When I first watched him earlier in his career, I thought he'd be more than that. But what's funny is my comparison for Sky Moore is Tahir Whitehead.
Oh, you love Tahir Whitehead.
Well, I love Tahir. Former Temple Owl.
Of course.
I was there when he was there. He was drafted by Jim Schwartz in Detroit.
Interesting.
So, something similar there. Very good zone coverage player. He's got great ball skills at the linebacker spot. Was extremely productive in pass coverage. 6'2", 226, so he's a little bit skinny. You'd like to see him get a little bit better, a little bit bigger and stronger. Missed all of 2016 with a neck injury, but he's an intriguing player. I'd love a Sky Moore pick late in the draft.
All right, next up here on Draft Buzz, finally, it's long overdue. Long overdue.
I mean,
it's a very
long awaited.
It's beyond long awaited, and it's going to be, I'm sure, decimated within days by a trade or something. But I'm dropping my first-round mock draft, which then the fans, you guys get to select who the Eagles take at number 32. And just go through my first five picks. No surprises in my estimation. I think it's going to be quarterback heavy. I think four of the first five selections are going to be quarterbacks. I think Sam Darnold goes off the top to the Browns.
Sure.
For me, at number two for the Giants, okay, I have Josh Rosen going here. And for me, the Giants don't pick this high very often. And they need to find the man who's going to be the successor to Eli Manning.
They need to either take a quarterback or you make a trade to get you the picks that if you want to go get a quarterback in another year, you can.
That's what's got to be.
That's what it is.
Because, again, they have a bounce-back year. I get that, Pat Shurmur made Case Keenum look great and got him to Denver with a big contract, and maybe he says, I don't need to have a top-tier quarterback, to do it, but you got to have the guy to win, and this is their chance to get it. So when I hear it could be Saquon Barkley, it could be Bradley Chubb, they need to find their long-term answer quarterback. This is their chance to get it. I have Baker Mayfield to the Jets at number three. Scheme fit, it's going to be electrifying New York there for me, having the two quarterbacks there. Fourth, I have Saquon Barkley going to the Browns. Nice compliment there for Darnold. And then I have Buffalo going up to Denver to number five. I figure Buffalo's already traded up to 12. They're not going to stop there. They're going to try to work their way up. The one interesting thing, and it's like as I was going through the exercise, you're just like, after every couple of picks, I'd be like, this guy's fallen too far. He should be higher. I'm having that problem with Roquan Smith, fitting him in somewhere. With a team, somewhere in that top 10, top 15 range, even though it's probably where he's going to go. I'm just having a hard time trying to fit it there. With Denver, it seems like that even though they signed Keenum, that they're looking a lot at the quarterbacks in this draft class.
That's why I feel like they're going to take a quarterback if they have the ability to.
My whole thing is just, do they want to try to give Keenum the best chance to win now because a lot of the pieces are there to win now? That's why I'm thinking that maybe they pass on the quarterback at least for now. So the rest of that will be on philadelphia.com for everyone to hash out. But again, the main thing is for fans, to pick who's remaining at 32. Quick mock draft roundup here. A couple new additions. Jonah Tolles from NDT Scouting has Rashawn Evans going to the Eagles. Dane Brugler, who we had on the podcast last week, make sure to check out that interview, has DJ Moore. Loves DJ Moore. Compared him to Steve Smith, the former Carolina Panther and Baltimore Raven.
Yep.
Not the New York Giant. And Philadelphia Eagle. And then Todd McShay has Leighton Vander Esch there for the Eagles at 32.
That would be the order I would like them into. Like, I would love Vander Esch. I would like DJ Moore, and I would like Rashawn Evans.
I was thinking you were going the other way, starting with Rashawn Evans.
I would love Leighton Vander Esch. I would really, really like DJ Moore, and I would really like Rashawn Evans, too.
Problem is, probably in that order is going to be the most difficult to be there.
Yes.
That will be the thing.
Absolutely.
All right, so that's our draft buzz. Now let's get to our Mr. Relevant, an outstanding conversation with none other than Lance Zierlein from NFL.com.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
I'm really excited for this week's Mr. Relevant because, quite honestly, he is one of the hardest working analysts in the draft industry and is none other than Lance Zierlein. He does all the profiles for NFL.com. He's also a sports talk host in Houston. Lance, thank you very much for joining us. And what's the over-under on the profiles this year? Did you hit 425 or so?
As always, I get to 500, and anybody that I don't get to who gets drafted, because everyone has their little sneaky under-the-radar guys, I have to write them after the draft. So usually the over-under is in the neighborhood of about 505.5, 506 in the neighborhood.
Lance, what's interesting is, as a pro day started, you actually posted on Twitter, at Lance Zierlein, by the way, a great follow, you actually posted for agents to reach out to you if you haven't done their profiles yet. How many agents took you up on the offer?
Oh, a ton. Probably about 10 agents, and then I was getting them from individual players. I had just internet draft nicks reach out, which was fine. I mean, because I actually found some guys that way. This is for my ghost list. I put together a ghost list for the last 40 players, 50 players. And I want to look for guys with great physical traits, guys from small schools, guys who may have been injured this year, who may have had draftable grades before the season started. And, you have to sift through some players who aren't very, who aren't going to be drafted. But I ran into some. There's one agent in particular who has about five or six clients that are unbelievable testers. Like, they tested off the charts. And those are the kind of guys who can end up getting drafted in the sixth or seventh round. So it was actually very fruitful. I've done that now for two or three years in a row, and it actually is a big help for unearthing some small school guys that I didn't know about.
You're outstanding from this scouting analysis standpoint, but you're also a bit of a newsbreaker from time to time as well. You came on this podcast in 2016 and told us that the Eagles were making the move to get up from the time number 8 to number 2 to get Carson Wentz in the draft, and obviously that came to fruition. With the Eagles sitting at 32, are you hearing anything special about the team this time around?
No, nothing special about that team in particular. I mean, that's a much more high profile. You hear stuff about early pick guys, but not late round guys, because the problem is a lot of times it's dependent upon what happens in front of you. So there's really nothing that you can do. I am hearing, I mean, in terms of an early pick, I'm getting more and more vibes that Sam Darnold is not going to be the first pick, and that it very well could be Josh Allen. So if, I don't know about breaking it here necessarily, but I'm getting that from places that I trust, that Josh Allen, this is not going to be just smoke, that this is a very real thing that has a good chance of happening. So if that's the case, it'll be a little bit of a surprise. I certainly don't have Josh Allen as a top quarterback, but John Dorsey, you go back and track every quarterback that he has had, he has big arm guys, and they moved up for a big arm guy in last year, Pat Mahomes, and Josh Allen is a traits guy. John Dorsey's a traits guy. He's got the big arm, and I tell you what, the people I'm hearing this from, I trust, and so we may very well start to see a little changing of the guard in the mock draft as this starts to get out there, this information. I got a funny feeling we're going to start seeing Josh Allen show up at number one in more mock drafts.
So to follow up on that, that's a bit of a bombshell here.
Well, and poor Chris has spent like 3 weeks on this mock draft, and he's having to change, oh, this trade happened, I got to change this, oh, this trade happened. So then you come on, we just got done touting his first five picks, and right away, number
just
one.
Blows out of the water, exactly. That's not happening. So.
What's the can fallout? Happen is you start hearing stuff the last month.
Are the Giants now sitting at number two like, great, we're getting Sam Darnold, we're going to get the guy that we would love to have at number one?
I would have to think so. I really think there's a good chance that the Giants will not draft a quarterback if Darnold goes one. But if Darnold doesn't go one, I think they'd lock in on Darnold, Sam Darnold. You never know how guys have the board stack, but I would think that Sam Darnold would have a great shot at going number two if he doesn't go number one. And if that's the case, it will be interesting. I think the Jets have to, for the Jets to make the move up to number three, they clearly have had to have at least two quarterbacks in mind. They had to have at least two quarterbacks in mind that weren't named Sam Darnold. So I don't think it's going to really impact them, but what it could do is potentially impact. If that scenario were to happen where it goes Allen, Darnold, and let's say Mayfield, three, all of a sudden the Denver Broncos become a spot where if the Browns obviously are not going to draft a quarterback at number four, if they don't love either Rosen or Mayfield in this particular scenario that we're going through, then I think the Broncos once again become, and I had this in my last mock draft, that's the spot where teams are going to try to pinpoint to draft, to move up in the draft. So I think we would see, Denver has a potential need at quarterback. They just signed Case Keenum. But I could see a team calling John Elway and saying, hey, I mean, that team could be the Buffalo Bills saying, hey, we want up, we want that pick. And I think it would, with the needs that you have right now, if you're the Denver Broncos and you do have a quarterback under contract right now, it wouldn't shock me if Denver moved out of that number five spot for a team that was hungry for a quarterback.
So, Lance, needless to say, this top half of the first round is going to be wild. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch unfold on draft night 2 weeks from this Thursday. So with all the craziness that could happen in the first 20, 25 picks, as does every year, we're going to see somebody fall that we don't necessarily expect to fall, whether it's going to be, you know, an offensive lineman or a pass rusher or a corner. In your mind, as we sit here today, who is a guy that could fall out of the top half of the first round that no one is really expecting to, that could be in striking distance for the Eagles?
Striking distance is in moving up?
Yeah, it'd be a potentially.
Well, I think there's actually an outside chance that I don't know if it's really considered a fall, but I think Calvin Ridley is potentially going to be available for the Dallas Cowboys, and that will be a decision the Cowboys have to make. So, I mean, that's a little bit of a fall. I think Minkah Fitzpatrick could fall outside of the top 10. I'm not sure that that's you want to come all the way up in a draft to go get Minkah Fitzpatrick. But in terms of somebody falling, I think Josh Jackson, if they had the inclination to grab Derwin James is not going to fall. I can tell you that. Minkah's not going to fall beyond the Green Bay Packers at number 14. Derwin could very easily go number 7 because that's a team that needs safety. But, you know, I've got running back, wide receiver. I'm looking at – you know, I think there is a chance that you could see an offensive lineman and maybe even a tackle slide into the realm of where Philadelphia could strike. And if you want to go get a guy who can – be competitive right now as a swing player. You maybe bump him into guard, a Mike McGlinchey, for example, if he were to slide down at all. You could potentially do that with the eyes on making him your future starter at left tackle. I think that's a possibility. I don't think there's going to be a bunch of, based on what I can tell, I don't think there's going to be a bunch of big sliders this year, honestly. I don't see it happening. I think there's a chance Josh Rosen could fall just a little bit, but he's not going to fall far because of how desperate everyone is at cornerback. So I'm not really sure this year is a big, at least not for what I think the Eagles' needs are. I think there's an outside chance Harold Landry could actually slide just a little bit because he doesn't touch some of the physical parameters that some teams really love on edge rushers.
I love the fact that not only do you scout, do reports on 500 players, but you put a grade on each and every one. So fans could go to NFL.com/draft and see how you have the entire board stacked. With that being said, Lance, is there a player who you're much higher on than the consensus, you know, draft Twitter, let's say? And on the flip side, is there a player that you're not as high on as most of the analysts out there are?
Probably not. I may not be as high on Maurice Hurst. Some of the others, I've got them in the 30. Well, I've got Josh Allen outside of the top 30. I don't know if that counts. I got him now as I've been vacillating between the fifth and fourth quarterback, so I guess that might be one. The guy that I would be a little higher on than other people, maybe Justin Reed. I've got a pretty good grade on him. I've got a top 20 grade. I think Justin Reed is an excellent football player from Stanford. He's not getting a lot of talk, but I thought his tape was incredible. I saw it just before I went to the combine. For whatever reason, I was just late on getting to Justin Reed as one of my write-ups. And I was blown away, and I saw a lot of speed on tape. Well, he did it at the combine, too. He ran a 4.40. He tested great. So I think Justin Reed should be in the discussion with Derwin James, and then if you consider Minkah Fitzpatrick a safety, Minkah as well. I just call it Derwin because I know Derwin's a safety. I know Justin Reed is a safety. I know Ronnie Harrison is. I think Justin Reed right now should be discussed along with potentially Derwin James in that category of impact safeties. And so I think I'm a little higher on him than everyone else. Carlton Davis, cornerback out of Auburn, I'm higher on him than other people are going to be. And then there's some guys like P.J. Hall from you know, Sam Houston. There's some guys like that. Ronald Jones, I've been pretty high on Ronald Jones, but I've cooled a little bit recently, but not a lot. So Taven Bryan, I'm probably a little bit higher on Taven Bryan than a lot of people are, but I'm trying to project what these guys are going to be. I'm not trying to tell you where they rank right now as football players. I'm trying to figure out what they're going to be in 3 to 5 years.
Lance, you mentioned earlier about, you know, potential offensive linemen potentially falling down to the Eagles at 32. Before you got to NFL.com, I think everybody knew you as the preeminent offensive lineman evaluator in the media. And when you say something about an offensive lineman, people tend to listen. Whether it's a guy that you have a first-round grade on or, you know, even a day-two grade on, who are the guys that kind of get your engine revved up in this class from the offensive line spot, whether it's outside of tackle or inside of guard? They could be big-name guys or guys that are kind of flying under the radar. Who are the linemen that you really can put your stamp of approval on in this class?
Well, I mean, obviously Quentin Nelson, obviously James Daniels. Those are two big ones. I'll give you some names here. Tony Adams, guard out of North Carolina State. They run a lot of inside and outside zone. I think he's really good at it, really good. He's only 6'1", but he's got decent arm length with 33 inches, and he's a former tennis player, if you can believe that. And his dad was a wrestling coach. So you got footwork and leverage in your background. He's got great balance and body control through contact. You won't hear anyone talking about him. He may go in the fifth round. He's going to be a starter for years to come. He's like, to me, a better built version of Shaq Mason with better balance as well. He's one. I would say Dez Harrison from West Georgia has tremendous athletic ability and tremendous potential. There are some guys, I'll give you an example, like Antonio Garcia. I saw some ability there, but I thought there was a finite ceiling on him. And I think this class is full of guys with low ceilings at the tackle position. He's one of those rare prospects this year that I think has a very high ceiling, but his floor is low. So, you know, and you don't know if he can keep on enough weight to play in the NFL tackle. Those are big concerns that have to be vetted, but I think he has a very high ceiling. There's a kid out of Hawaii named Dejon Allen, who I think is just really a talented, aggressive, tough football player. He tested well at Hawaii. He was a tackle there. He will have to move inside the guard or maybe even center. I think center could be his best position. I think he's got the potential to be a starter in the league, but, you know, he's got to be consistent and he has to show up every single game and every single practice. He would be another guy like that. I'm just trying to think because there's not a lot of tackles like that this year. I can promise you that. Will Richardson, I think, could end up being an interesting guard out of North Carolina State. He plays tackle. Doesn't have great body type. He's a little bit, you know, soft physically in terms of his body type. He's not a soft player. And then he also has some character concerns. But I think I'm a little higher on Jamarco Jones than a lot of people. I just see a player who gets people blocked. He's not perfect. And there's going to be times on tape where it looks like he's, you know, a little iffy. And yet at the end of that play, somebody gets pushed past the pocket with the quarterback. So I'm higher on Jamarco Jones as a potential NFL prospect than some of the NFL teams I've talked to. So those are some of the names I think that could fit into that role of who I'm putting my stamp on. And there are other guys as well. I mean, there's actually plenty of guys who I put my stamp on, but maybe not as much as some. And I've given you some high end, some middle, and then, you know, Dejon Allen is potentially a sixth or seventh rounder, but he's got the ability, I think, to become a starter in the league down the road.
Lance, I want to stay along the lines of scrimmage here. It seems like both offensive line, defensive line, from an edge standpoint, it's not a relatively strong draft class up high. Certainly there's Bradley Chubb. You talked about Harold Landry. Talked about Mike McGlinchey. But both offensively and defensively, it's strong along the interior. How many of these guys, and you mentioned Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame, how many of these guys do you think go in round one? It's hard to project how many interior linemen are going to typically go early on in the draft. In this year's class, with it being so strong there, do you feel like there's going to be a lot of guys there in the first round? You know, do you think James Daniels goes in the first round? You talked about Mo Hurst from the defensive tackle standpoint. From the interior line standpoint, who do you think makes it in the first 32?
I think Hurst will. I think Taven Bryan goes. Vita Vea and Deron Payne, they're all going. These are just off the top of my head. Those four, I think, will go. You know, obviously Quentin Nelson goes. I think James Daniels goes. I think Billy Price is going to go into second from Ohio State. When it's all said and done, I'm trying to remember if there's another guard that I'm missing in the first. I know it's a deep. You know, this draft is really, really good. I had a GM tell me this morning, as a matter of fact, this is a great second and third round draft and even into the fourth round, a great one. And he thinks a lot of teams are going to be begging out of the first round and into the second round because of how deep the draft is. You, as a matter of fact, you look at what the Colts did. They moved from 3 to 6, and they picked up 3 second-rounders between this year and next year. So I think that's an interesting strategy to go add second-rounders because it is really deep, and it's good at safety. It's good at cornerback. I think it's good at guard. Once you get out of there, it's great at running back. I mean, look, I love Saquon Barkley. He's a top player in this draft, but you get a chance to get Rashad Penny or Sony Michel in the second round or, you know, maybe Nick Chubb in the second or third. You start looking at these guys who are going to be available, maybe even Darius Geis in the second round. Boy, that is a really good spot to pick. For offensive and defensive linemen specifically, which you're talking about, yeah, I think the first two rounds are really good. And then I think you're going to wait. I think it will be 1, 2, and 3. Typically what people will do is teams go on a mad rush for offensive and defensive linemen for the first 3 rounds, and then they'll wait a lot of times until you get to 5 and 6 and try to find some guys with some physical traits. So I think that's what's going to happen this year. But it is a good year, I think, high-end for defensive tackles, maybe not across the board long-term. Not a great year for edge rushers. If you need edge rush presence, this is not going to be your year. And if you need a tackle, this is not going to be your year. But if you need a guard or center, this is definitely your year.
Our last question for you, Lance, is about a piece that you wrote about diamonds in the rough that's up on NFL.com. And there's one player on there that I know has been kind of the buzz since his pro day workout. He wasn't invited to the combine. That's Southern Miss safety Tarvarius Moore. He's 6'5". He's 199 pounds. Tested like a ridiculous freak show athlete. And the film backs that up. He looks like a day two guy on film. And I know that's something that you wrote in that piece. Are there other guys, that, I mean, whether they were in that piece or not, that have really kind of caught your eye on this pro day circuit that should have been invited to the combine that are going to end up being not just mid-round draft picks, but potential impact players at the next level?
Oh, yeah. P.J. Hall, it was a joke from Sam Houston. I mean, P.J. Hall has this ridiculous production. I mean, his production is off the charts. Tackles for losses, sacks. He's had 14 blocked kicks. He's 6 feet tall, and he's had 14 block kicks. Right off the bat, that should set off a flag, like, how is he doing this? And I went and watched the tape. I went and saw, like, 8 of his blocks. I had access to 7 or 8 of his blocks. And he has tremendous leverage. He has tremendous will and determination. And he just barrels through as hard, you know, because he's got great twitch and great power and lower body torque, that he just rips through the blocking scheme and gets these blocks. He's got 9 passes defense. He's got like 4 interceptions in his career. They stood him up as an outside rusher. He's Grady Jarrett. For people who haven't seen him, he's basically Grady Jarrett, and somehow he didn't get to the combine. So what did he do at his pro day? No big deal. He just had a 38-inch vertical leap at 300 pounds and 36 reps on the bench press. Do you know how few guys have ever done this? Basically, you can't find a defensive tackle. And when you start looking at defensive linemen, Mario Williams has done it. J.J. Watt didn't do it. I mean, what P.J. Hall did was so unbelievable from a workout standpoint. And if you think, well, he's a workout warrior, well, then you watch his tape and you see his production and you realize he should have been at the combine. If that pro day doesn't get your attention, I don't know what does. Mike Ford, another one. He ran a 4.50 from southeastern Missouri. But he had explosive vertical numbers, great explosion traits, and he's got very good short area quickness. He's a cornerback who's kind of flying under the radar that's going to get drafted on day 3, and I think he has an outside chance of becoming a starter, no worse than a cornerback 3 in the future. Tarvarius Moore is going to go in the second round. I mean, I've talked to enough teams now that I realize chances are he's going to go in the second round because his tape and ability is really good, but he just has 1 year as a full-time starter, so he's really flown under the radar. But this testing, like you said, this is where your antenna come up when you see testing like that. Let's see. There's a lot. I mean, basically all the guys I'm looking at, there's a guy named Chad Meredith from southeastern Missouri. They have another kid from southeastern Missouri, Kendall Donerson, who ran a 4.48. He's 250 pounds. He ran a 4.48. His vertical leap was like 40 inches. It's the biggest freak show workout. And then you look at the tape and it's like, ooh, this isn't very good. But guys who test like that, they become priority free agents, and they start having a chance to make teams on special teams, and then coaches try to coach up those special physical traits. So you have to pay attention when players put together huge workouts. You have to go look at the tape, and if the tape is pretty good, like with Mike Ford, you pay very, very close attention. A guy named Gary McKnight and Vincent Smith, two wide receivers, good pro days, good tape. I think they got a shot at getting drafted, and if they don't get drafted, they're definitely going to be high-end priority free agents.
Lance, I think we've hit on about 60 of the guys that you've scouted in the 2018 NFL Draft, give or take. But Lance, again, Lance Zierlein from NFL.com, you can read all of the scouting reports. He grades every single prospect. It's outstanding. It's phenomenal. It's a treasure trove. It's an outstanding resource that I think everyone uses at this time of year. Lance, phenomenal work as always, and thanks for giving us something to chew on with this Josh Allen nugget that we'll be debating the rest of the show and the rest of the draft process. Again, Lance Zierlein from NFL.com. Follow him on Twitter at Lance Zierlein. Lance, thank you very much for the time.
All right, thanks, guys.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
All right.
There's a lot to unpack there.
A lot to unpack. And I don't even know if we're going to be able to really do that here. 20 man's amazing resource there. A lot to get into there. One of my favorite things while listening to the phone interviews, though, Fran, is your reaction to some of the
That's what people miss
analysis.
with the video.
That,
the podcast.
It's. I mean, there are certain names like there. Who was the
Tony
one?
Tony Adams.
Tony Adams. You were sitting here, fist pumping, getting all psyched. Like when our guest mentions an under the radar name who Fran loves, Fran just looks like a kid on Christmas morning.
Especially Lance, because Lance is an O-line guy. Like I
yes.
asked the question. So when he says he likes an offensive lineman that I like, I feel really good.
You feel vindicated.
Because you feel validated from that. And it's funny, went to the combine. I watched Tony Adams before the combine. He actually stood out to me. I forget who I was even watching, but I was like, man, who's this guy? A couple years ago. And he goes to he doesn't go to the combine. Will Richardson, his right tackle, the guy lined up next to him, does. And one of the first things I asked Will Richardson at the podium was, why isn't Tony Adams here? And he just laughed and he shook his head. He was like, I have no idea why I'm here and he's not. Like, I mean, Tony Adams is a good player.
Now, you do make the stink face also when there's a guy.
Yeah,
who's...
we don't need to talk about that as much.
I'm not going to get into which guys. But there are some times where you just like cringe like, it's like
that happens.
Like sour milk or something right. like that. So, all right, pick six. Six players who, if they're still sitting there at 32.
This is a fun exercise.
And it's difficult because, again, this is the latest that the Eagles have picked in the first round, being at 32. And if there's a guy that good, like, I didn't want to go like Sam Darnold. I didn't want to, like,
silly,
you know,
right, yeah.
I didn't want to make this a silly exercise. I'm trying to make it in the vein of someone who's projected to go. And we talked about this with Lance, somewhere in that, like, 15 to 20 range who slides a little bit here. So. I'm going to kick things off, and this is a guy Lance talked about, James Daniels, offensive lineman from Iowa, starting center the last 2 years, but has experience at guard as well. You look at the Eagles' offensive line, and you know Jason Kelce is coming off an all-pro year. He's in the prime of his career, perfect fit for this offense. Why would you want someone in that position? Well, I love the guard versatility with James Daniels, because that's going to be a position I think that Eagles fans are going to be keeping an eye on. That left guard spot, Stefan Wisniewski, phenomenal last season, really solidified the spot. Long term, beyond this season, I think that's fair to question or fair to wonder if that's an area the Eagles might try to upgrade.
Yeah.
So they need more youth there. So if James Daniels makes it to 32, he's a guy who I wouldn't be surprised to see the Eagles pull the plug on.
And we know Doug Peterson loves that versatility along the offensive line, so I like that pick a lot. My first one, I'm going to go with the other side of the line of scrimmage at defensive tackle with Vita Vea. Not what you would expect, like in terms of, because he's 6'4", he's 347 pounds, what you'd expect for like that one-gapping, attacking 4-3 front. But he is really disruptive because he's not really explosive in terms of like that quick first step gaining ground upfield, but he times the snap very well. And because of how stout he is and because of how naturally powerful he is, he moves people when he touches them. I mean, you can see guys, their helmets rock back when he strikes them in their chest. He's got natural power. He can disrupt at the line of scrimmage. He played all over the line for the Huskies out west. So when you look at Vita Vea, yeah, I mean, most people think he's going to go like 19, 20, 22, whatever. He could be there at 32, and if he were there, he might be a guy who's too good to pass up.
Do you know his full name?
Can you I said it one time reading Schefter's tweet, and I'm not going to try it.
That's it. I stayed along the same in the same position group, and I went with Mo Hurst from Michigan.
Yes.
And he's when you look at what the Eagles want in a D tackle, you know, 4-3 penetrator, he would fit the bill there. And he could be there at 32 because there were some questions with the heart condition, yeah. But he was not asked to go back to Indy for the recheck. No, however, problem. Teams may still take him off the board regardless. They don't want the risk. For me, the reason I picked him is just because when you look at the Eagles' defensive tackle situation, you have Fletcher Cox, who's a franchise player. Tim Jernigan received a large contract in the offseason. You know, Haloti Ngai's here on a one-year deal, you know, taking Bo Allen's place, basically. But you have other players who can slide inside, like Brandon Graham, like Michael Bennett, that you kind of like, is D-tackle really a need? No, but you want to keep having the resources there to be able to send players in waves at the quarterback, and it wouldn't shock me to see the Eagles saying, you know what, it's not a hole that we need to fill, but why not get some more talent, even though they use a first-round pick last year
exactly.
on an end in Derek Barnett.
Yeah, Maurice Hurst, I think, would be he'd be tough to pass up on. He's a stud on the inside. One guy I think is interesting in this discussion, because I think he's going to be there, probably. I think he's probably going to be there.
Okay.
Is Mike Gesicki from Penn State.
Tight end, okay.
And I think that it would be, you would say it's too, he's too good to pass up on because he's so similar to Zach Ertz in everything that he does. You know, what Zach was coming out of Stanford, I mean, the similarities are very, very striking. And so, yeah, I think everyone would say the Eagles are probably going to draft a tight end at some point draft weekend. If it's a round one guy, I think that would probably surprise some people. But, I mean, you could make a case that Mike Gesicki is too good to pass up on because of what he brings to the table in terms of his athleticism, his ability to go up and win in the air, the contested situations. He's outstanding at the catch point. He's getting a little bit better as a route runner, so he's learning there. He'll be able to learn from Zach Ertz in that department because Zach is one of the best route runners at the tight end position in the NFL. Certainly can get a little bit better as a blocker. Doesn't need to be a baller. You don't need him to be that, but if you can get him to be functional, now you're cooking with gas. And so, to me, Mike Gesicki, you could make an argument. I'm not saying I feel this way, but you could make an argument that he would be too good to pass up at 32.
A lot of fans listening to this will be very excited to hear Gesicki's name there.
But there would be people that would be like, oh, this is ridiculous, too. Like I know when we put out the Meet the Prospect on Mike Gesicki, people were like, it was one way or the other. It was, oh, my God, he's never going to be there. This will be awesome. Or it would be,
yeah.
Why would we draft a tight end in round one? This is silly.
I could see it.
Right.
Very easily. Yep. You lost. Look what you lost this offseason.
Trey Burton. Yep.
Exactly. So it's certainly an area you need to address. Signing Richard Rodgers is great, but that doesn't alleviate, I think, the long-term question of the position. My last guy, again, another situation where he could be there at 32, and with the way the running back rotation worked last season, you might think, why would the Eagles draft a running back at the end of the first round? But if Darius Geis from LSU is there, you know, a workhorse back would completely change the dynamic of the offense. You lost LeGarrette Blount,
yep.
And to me, I think he would certainly fill that role capably.
No question. He'd be great at it.
But he's also productive on third down, something that LeGarrette Blount wasn't the most last season. So a lot of people would say, well, if you're not going to make him your feature guy, if you're not going to put him on the field for all three downs, why use a first-round pick on a back? I just think that, you know, Doug Peterson and Mike Rowe can do so many things, and Deuce Staley can bring the best out of him. It would be another intriguing option for the Eagles' offense.
Yeah, if they felt that it was worth it, then they'll put that into action. It would be my assertion if they made that pick. I'm going to go with Harold Landry as my last guy. I really don't think he's going to be there, and we're going to hit on this topic in a little bit in the show. I don't think he's going to be there, but let's say, you know, for whatever reason, and even, you know, Lance said it earlier, like he doesn't fit all the measurables for people, and you know, there's a chance if he were there at 32, even though he is so similar in terms of like style and what the strengths and weaknesses are to Derek Barnett, he would be really hard to pass.
I would
up.
Love.
Oh man, I
love Landry at 32.
I would love it.
Don't see it happening though. Yeah. So pick six players who might just be too good to pass up at number 32. Now the final portion of the show, your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
Before we get into your questions in our draft mailbag, a special shout out to Melissa Kelly, who's holding it down behind the glass, doing a phenomenal job, Can't wait to listen to the podcast because I know she's doing a great job producing things. So thanks for stepping up as BT is not here today. All right, now your questions here. First one comes from our good friend Chris from SLC, courtesy of Apple Podcasts. I'm telling you, Fran.
It's the way to get into the show.
Crushing it in Apple
Podcasts.
Wants to know, what are some traits you look for in a prospect to be a great returner in the NFL, and why do some prospects who were great returners in a college struggle to adapt in the NFL?
Well, I think the number one
thing,
well, because yeah. it's a very good question.
It's a great question.
I think really there are a couple things. Number one, you're looking for, and it differs between kick return and punt return, right? I mean, if you're looking for a kick returner, you're looking more long speed. If it's a punt returner, you're looking more for short area quickness, make that first man. If you, as a punt returner, if you can make that first man miss, you're in good shape. I put a lot of value on a guy that's done it. Like, to me, it's really hard to project and say, yeah, this guy's going to be able to do it if he didn't do it at the college level.
Certainly.
I think that there's certainly I'm not saying he could never do it, but there's a growth period. I wouldn't say, like, you draft a guy and he's got traits to do it, but he's never done it, that he's going to be your kick returner year one. That's tough, I think.
I'm trying to think if there's a guy. It's not going to come to my mind immediately.
Yeah, I think that's really
done that. That's the thing.
And actually, if I remember right, there was a long Bill Belichick. You know how, like, Bill Belichick will get asked a question once every, like, 3 weeks?
And gives you the long yes.
So he gave a great answer on this, and I actually have it up.
Okay.
Because I have it. I saved it. He said, of course, the easy answer is if one person does both, meaning kick return and punt return, that would make it a lot easier, and it also makes the overall roster discussion a lot easier because you're only using one roster spot.
Of course.
So the big difference is, of course, on kickoff, you have a chance to build up your speed. You get a chance to handle the ball clean. There's nobody on top of you when you're catching it. You're able to run and set up your blocks, hit things full speed, where the coverage and the blockers and the wedge all come together, and the returners get a chance to set those blocks up and hit them and get through there. Punt game is a lot more situational, mostly on kickoffs. The ball's always kicked from the same place. Rarely is there a difference, but there, you know, there are some, but minimal. After a safety or that type of thing. But punting, the ball could be anywhere. The situation that they're punting can be quite diverse and sometimes complex. Punters are very good at directional punting and kicking different things, different kinds of punts, end over end, spirals that don't turn over, and so forth. The ball handling is a little bit more complex. So you need a guy who can track the ball, understand what your situation is, be able to read the things coming at you in high speed. Punt return is tough.
Yeah.
That is not easy. In addition to that, Belichick goes on to say, you're dealing with the defenders and coverage players that are on you a lot quicker. So in a personal opinion, they're different. I find the two plays very fascinating and intriguing, and he goes on to the strategy of the football. But I think that's really the big thing, is you're looking for guys that can set up blocks on kick return. You want that speed to be able to take it the distance, but you want guys to set up blocks, be decisive. You cannot dance as a kick returner. And then for punt return, you want a guy that can make somebody miss and then just get upfield. The most important thing, and this is what I always learn from a punt returner, get 10 yards. Like, don't try and bust the big one. If you can get the offense a free first down, that's a win. So that's the big thing. Make the first man miss because you're going to have somebody unblocked, and then just go get 10.
If you're averaging 10 yards a kick,
I mean,
or a 10 yard punt return,
right.
10 yards punt return, you're in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Basically.
No question.
I think the league leader is usually 14 to 15,
right. Yep.
You know, per return. And the difference can make, you look at last season, the Eagles did a great job of finding Kenyon Barner to come back.
No question.
But that's a hole now that the Eagles have to fill because you don't have Darren Sproles. Barner's a free agent. You would love to have someone add the sizzle that Sproles brought, but Barner was very good at just making the right decision, fielding the ball. You know, the Arizona game, he had the big return, was named Special Teams Player of the Week, but by and large, that's fine. The bonus would be, can you give it the 10 yards each and every time?
And the second part of the question was, why do some prospects that were great college returners seem to struggle in the NFL? And I think that there's two things. Number one, a guy, oftentimes, is the most athletic guy on the field. You see that at the college level. Like, they're able to out-athlete the players that they're seeing on special teams at the college level. Because, again, college rosters, the depth chart is much deeper. The guys that are playing special teams aren't necessarily first and second round draft picks. They're guys that you're able to out-athlete at the college level.
It's not the Eagles who are using starting players.
Right.
Guys who are starting on offense and defense.
Yeah, exactly.
On it.
And then the other part of it is that things just move so much faster in the NFL. And for that reason, exactly. Things are so much faster. just because a guy's great out of the NFL, you have to be able to watch and see, like, all right, how, or in college, you have to be able to watch and see exactly why he's so good. And that goes to every position.
Side note, I know you have your database up at all times. Your top kick and punt returner. Ooh. In this year's class.
Kick returner is probably Rashad Penny. He was outstanding at it at San Diego State. Did it at a really high level. I know Dante Jackson from LSU is a great returner. Mike Hughes from Central Florida is a great returner at corner. Isaiah Oliver was a good returner. I don't know that he's going to be a guy that you're going to view as a great returner at the next level. Trying to think of some receivers. Christian Kirk, Dante Pettis, absolutely, for punt return. Both of those guys, I think, are very good in that role. I'm just kind of scrolling through the list. DJ Chark returned punts this year at a very high level for LSU. To me, he looks more like a kick returner in the NFL level, but never was really asked to do it. Saquon was a great kick returner.
Certainly.
And is a guy that you would definitely want in that role. I mentioned Rashad Penny. I'm just kind of thumbing through the list here. Nyheim Hines from NC State was a great returner. Mark Walton was a kick returner and also was a core four special teams guy at Miami. So there's some options there for sure. DJ Reed from Kansas State, another guy just popped into my head. Mm-hmm. So there are some good returners in this class.
All right, next question comes from James Tyree, also from Apple Podcasts. Wants a scouting report on West Georgia's Desmond Harrison, and where do we think he'll go in the draft? Right. And I know Lance talked a lot about him. It's interesting because I learned about his backstory through you, Fran. You told me about him. He was a highly touted recruit, went to Texas, was dismissed after his freshman year, didn't play 2 years, ends up at West Georgia. You know, the athleticism just pops
off
the
charts.
It's amazing, absolutely amazing. And then gets an invite to the combine and tests pretty well at the combine.
Ran 4.75.
Yeah, the guy can move.
Yep.
My thing is, and this is from a press conference interview, and take from it what you will. It's you know, it's what I have to work with here.
Yep.
I just have questions about someone who just left the game for 2 years. Now, he explained that he took a job as a furniture mover, and he didn't want to go down in level of competition, so he was hoping that he would just, you know, be able to land on with another school after a year. But after 2 years, basically, he realized that wasn't happening. West Georgia had reached out to him shortly after he was dismissed from Texas, so that's why he decided to go there and was able to play right away. I think that's going to be the big question is, you know, you have to have the heart and desire to want to play in the NFL.
Yep.
Is it there with him? Or is it a situation where he's, look, I'm talented at football. It's a way to make a nice living. I'm going to go do it. You know, it doesn't always work out.
That's the
background, but you know more about the on-field stuff.
Like I said earlier, he's a freak show athlete. I mean, and that's the first thing that stands out is the way he moves. He's got great feet. When they use him out in space in the screen game and the perimeter run game, I mean, the guy is just – he's remarkable. His ability to finish guys at that level, again, you're talking about the D2 level, was really, really high. But he was, like, in the 270s, 280s at that level. You can't play that way in the NFL.
No.
He came in at 292 at the combine, I believe, which is a fine number. You can see he's starting to add weight. But he was sick as well. So he was sick, and that's why he missed it. He was going to go to the Senior Bowl, and everybody was excited because he was going to go to the Senior Bowl. How was he going to look? And he got sick. I think he had the flu. And so
he was coming off an injury.
Yeah.
He had a knee injury, I think, at the end of last season.
So there were things there that prevented him from going to Mobile. He couldn't put on as much weight as he would have wanted because he was sick. So there were some things there. And then the off-field. I mean, so the size is going to be a question. The off-field is going to be a question. He's not, like, a refined player right now, obviously. He's not, you know, in terms of, like, the way he uses his hands in the run and pass game. I mean, he needs work. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Lance mentioned earlier, not a great tackle class. You got a guy like mm-hmm. that with great traits. Would it shock you if he went in the third round? Like,
no, because teams need a tackle.
Right. It's such an important position.
It reminds me from the project standpoint, not comparing skill set or athleticism, just Dylan Gordon, based on how the Eagles tried to mold him into being a tackle. It's a project that someone's going to be taking on. That's a quiet project, though, for a third-round pick. Now, if it hits, you could have a Jason Peters-type player who's your, you know, standout tackle for years to come. If it doesn't, it's a big swing and a miss.
No question.
So, knowing the risk going into the selection. So, next, this one's going to be interesting. Fran's going to do a little exercise here. He's got a piece of paper out. You know, got the blue pen.
I'm a blue pen guy.
So am I. Yep. At Open Veins UK on Twitter. Interesting handle, but that's not why we're bringing this question up. This question is very good. Who do you think is 100% long gone by the 32nd pick? And just for the record, Open Veins UK, him or her, not going to assume, has a list of 18 players.
So I think four quarterbacks, for sure.
The
top four guys, yep. Saquon Barkley, that gets you five. I think all the receivers, I think it's very possible that they're either there or not there. Calvin Ridley, Lance said it earlier. I think there's a chance he's there at 32. I do, because here's the way I see it. If you think there's a chance that Christian Kirk goes before 32, and if you think there's a chance that DJ Moore and Cortland Sutton go before the Eagles pick at 32, I think there's a chance that Calvin Ridley goes, and if Lamar Jackson goes before 32, I think there's a chance Calvin Ridley's there. He's a little bit older. He didn't test great.
So you're saying Sutton and Moore, those guys are going before.
I could see a scenario where Calvin Ridley's there at 32.
That's a tough one, just because when doing the mock draft exercise, you get into some of those picks in the teens, like Arizona, Dallas, even after Allen Hurns, I think still could use a receiver. There's some spots there where you think of, or Baltimore, you know, even though they added Crabtree and John Brown as well.
Yep.
It's not out of the question for them. But not 100% fair enough. Because even I think about when Laquon Treadwell slipped in the draft a couple years ago. He still was a first-round pick, even though at one point he was like the projected – kind of reminds me of like the Harold Landry. Like he was the guy who was going to be like the top five pick.
Right.
Like very early in the process. And all of a sudden, as everything kind of got sorted out, he fell a lot farther. Fell a lot further than people expected.
Sure.
Then I think any of the receivers are in play. Who are you going with?
I've got 18 guys.
You got 18 guys.
I've got 18 guys. All right, so
I
think all the receivers.
I want to call Open Veins UK on the phone and be like,
I've got all the receivers and all the tight ends. I think there's a chance that all of them make it. The old lineman, Quentin Nelson, you can say for sure, definitely won't be there 32. Mike McGlinchey, I think you could say.
Isn't there.
Is not there. I think too many teams need a tackle. I know there are people that aren't high. I think he's a top 15, top 12 pick.
Gil Brandt's a top 10.
Yeah, the way I view Mike McGlinchey is I would take him top 10.
So,
but I know that not everybody sees it that way. I still think he's gonna go before the
Certainly.
Eagles. Pass rusher, Bradley Chubb, Harold Landry off the board 32.
So Marcus Davenport.
I'm not putting Marcus Davenport on there. I think there is an outside chance that he would have
fallen.
Fair. D tackle, Maurice Hurst.
Interesting.
I think now that the heart thing seems to not be an issue and he didn't get called back for the recheck,
no question.
He's off the board.
Vita Vea.
Dayron Payne. I think he's off the board. That kid, Dayron Payne to me is a top 8 prospect in the draft. Make an argument for top 5. And there are too many teams that number one need a disruptive nose tackle, but then number two like love guys that play the way he does. Like he's going to be like an Atlanta Falcon.
Yeah,
I'm
thinking like a Baltimore Raven.
Right, he's
Alabama
he's
connection.
Gonna be,
all
he's
that
gonna
stuff.
Be off
but
the board.
Yeah,
Maurice Hurst and Dayron Payne. I do think that there's a chance Vita Vea is there.
Really,
I think there's a chance only because of the style of play.
But just what he can do at that size.
Yeah, no question. But I think there's a chance that he's there. Outside chance. I don't think he's like. We could do this exercise in like the Bob McGinn fashion of like the.
That's kind of what it is.
Definitely gone. That,
it
like
me,
probably not there. Like
while reading the question, that's what it kind of made me think of. Okay.
Like Vita Vea would be on the probably not there, but I think there's an outside chance. Taven Bryan would be in the same boat. Linebacker, I put three guys.
You went.
I went Roquan and Tremaine Edmonds, even though to me Tremaine Edmonds shouldn't go that high. I think Tremaine Edmonds probably is going to go that high. I put Leighton Vander Esch on there, even though it pained me. I think Vander Esch is going to go before the Eagles pick. I would love that kid, but I think he's going to go first or before him. Corner, and it was a tough one here. I went with Minka Fitzpatrick.
You included Minka with the corners.
Include Minka, Denzel Ward, and Josh Jackson.
So that means you're up to 19 now.
This will be 19 because safety's Derwin James.
Got it.
So I have 19. So those would be the 19.
It's an interesting list. It's a good exercise.
Yes.
And it's a difficult one because I always think back to the Macklin draft. I wonder if the Eagles might have had him on a similar list, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's sitting there, and it's like,
sure. We
need to go up and get him.
And then you go in like the probably nots. Like to me, like the probably nots is like Darius Geis, Calvin Ridley,
Vita Vea,
James Daniels, Vita Vea, Marcus Davenport, Taven Bryan gives you six. That's probably it. In terms of like probably not. And then after that, it's like you get into everybody else that we've always been talking about, the Ronnie Harrison and the Rashawn Evans, and there's all these other guys that kind of fit that. Isaiah Wynn. There's a lot of guys there.
So very good exercise.
Cool exercise.
I would actually like to ask Open Veins UK who are his or her 18.
There you go.
To find out.
They can put it on Apple Podcasts.
There we go. Well, this is a Twitter submission.
It is.
That's
a good way to get it to us.
I like that. All right, our last one here, and this is a tough one. Okay.
The name made me laugh.
My cat's name is Milk.
My cat's name is Milk.
On Twitter. Great name. Phenomenal name. So that alone gets you in the door. If you could interview only one player.
This is tough.
Before the draft and ask one question.
This is really tough.
Who would it be and what would be the question? Wow.
This is really tough. So let's phrase it this way. Where you would definitely get an honest answer. Like truth serum question.
Yes. I guess I'm going into assuming. Yeah. I'm at least assuming that part. I'm not even thinking like it's going to be a press conference setting and you're going to get
even like, or a team interview setting where like they're all, they're going to be on their best behavior and, because you're not going to get 100% truth there either. One player.
I'm trying to go through.
I mean, I'm looking at the list and it's like, all right, like. Do you ask
like the Desmond Harrison one? I think is fascinating.
Right, that's more than one question.
Well, I think you would narrow it down to one question: is why did you stay out of the game for 2 years?
Yeah,
if you claim to love the game so much.
I
don't think that's my number one, but I think that's kind of when I went to the combine. That's kind of what I was actually looking for on that one.
Like,
so
like Baker Mayfield, like
that's great. Yeah, the quarterback. That's the thing is. The guys who are the headline makers in this year's draft class are guys that obviously are not going to be there for the Eagles, and it's most of them are quarterbacks. They're not at a position the Eagles need to address.
Yeah, if I'm the Giants, my number one question is Josh Rosen. How are you going to feel backing up Eli Manning as a rookie?
It's a great one.
In a potentially losing season, where you may feel like you're performing better than Eli.
It could be any quarterbacks. What do you really think about going to Cleveland?
Right.
That's an instrumental one.
How would Marcus Davenport feel about putting his hand on the ground? Arden Key, what happened last spring?
Arden Key might be.
What happened last spring? Like, take us, like, start to finish. What happened from over the last calendar year?
Arden Key might be one of the better
answer.
Ones.
I think that might be my answer.
Just because.
Arden Key, take us through the entire last calendar year.
Because he's a name that isn't mentioned, who has the talent. And the physique of someone who should be going high in the first round.
We've seen guys with that body type go in the first, the first 15 picks.
And he didn't make your list of 19. He didn't make your probably not.
He's going to be there.
He's going to be there.
Right. He could, in theory, he could be there when the Eagles are back up on the clock in the fourth round.
To think about that.
He could. I'm not saying
that's
he
astonishing.
Will. He could.
That's the difference between. What the analysts really get to see, which is most of the time, the on-field stuff versus what the teams have to do behind the scenes to get ready for the draft. So this is an outstanding question. I mean, we must be getting really close to the draft because...
You get the best questions.
Indeed. So, Fran, it's been a pleasure.
Always is.
Melissa, great job once again behind the glass filling in for BT. If you have questions or comments, make sure to leave them wherever you listen to our podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, wherever. On behalf of Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson, and you've been listening to another episode of the Journey to the Draft Podcast.